Good morning, counsel. This is the case of Travis versus Lamb. Give us just a second to.
Thank you.
Get our paperwork in order here, and you may be seated in the meantime. Madam Bailiff, are we ready to proceed?
We are, Your Honor.
Very good. Again, good morning, counsel. We will begin by introductions from the court. I'm Mike Havikin, the Chief Justice, and now by seniority as to service on the court, the other members of the court will introduce themselves.
Good morning. I'm Lindsay Miller Lerman, appearing by WebEx.
Morning, William Castle.
I'm Stephanie Stacy. Good morning.
Good morning, Jeff Funk.
Jonathan Papik. Morning.
Good morning, John Freidenberg.
Very good, Castle. And Mr. Bell, you're with us today.
Yes, Your Honor.
Good morning to you. Before you proceed, you might grab your chair just for one more second.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And Ms. Johnson Wilds, you are here also.
Yes,
Counsel, while you are seated at council table, please remain masked if at all possible. Mr. Bell, you don't have to do that at the moment, because when you are presenting, we would prefer that you not wear your mask so that we can hear and understand what you have to say. Do either council have any questions before we begin? With that, Mr. Bell, you may approach and you may proceed. Mr. Island, I'm sorry. You may approach and you may proceed.
That's all right. Your Honors, as we know, driving is a privilege, and it's an important privilege that we rely upon in this state. And the issue with the ALR process is that in order to continue utilizing that privilege, if you're arrested for DUI, your license can be revoked. And then if you exercise that due process right, you're not allowed to get an ignition interlock permit. Now, the purpose of the ALR statute was obviously enacted in order to protect the public from those who might be driving impaired. And that's why I think the ALR statute was to make it swift, to make it quick. But in order to protect the citizens' due process rights, the driving privilege, you're entitled to a hearing.
Mr. Island, how long was your client's administrative license revocation?
1 year.
And when did it expire? When did that 1 year period expire?
Actually, I've forgotten.
Well,
I'm sure it's...
We'll start this way. When did his 1 year license revocation period begin?
Would have been 15 days after his arrest. And I'll be honest, I haven't thought of that issue.
As we sit here now, it's expired. Is that fair?
That revocation would be expired. That is correct.
What possible declaratory judgment relief could your client obtain now, since the administrative license revocation is no longer in place?
He could not receive any relief, but I think this is of significant public interest, and it's this situation that keeps reoccurring, and we're unable to get up here to have some type of review, this type of process. The license is gone for such a short period of time. By the time you file an action and get before this court on the issue, I think it's almost impossible to get review of that. So I think it's going to continue to be a problem. In addition, there are hundreds, if not thousands, of people during this process that are unable to exercise that due process right, because they've said, even if I think the revocation is invalid, even if I think that was a mistake, I can't risk not being allowed to drive. And so I'm waiving that due process right in order to go forward. So I think under the public interest exception, Your Honor, that this would not be moot. And I didn't think about it until I saw the motion yesterday on my way here. And as I'm sure Justice Freidenberg remembers, it's a long trip. You don't have a lot of time to spend researching on the road to get here. So I apologize. I am not thoroughly prepared on that issue. You know, I didn't see it in the cases when I was researching it. You know, we were talking declaratory judgment actions in this issue. So it's something I had not considered in this matter, but I do think under the public policy exception, this would be appropriate for review, even though Mr. Travis no longer will need an ignition interlock permit. So
in this case, is there an implication?
I'm sorry, which justice?
Answer Justice.
I didn't hear what you said, Justice. I apologize.
I beg your pardon. Thank you, Justice Stacy. In this case, is this a criminal matter or is this a civil matter? Is the issue of entitlement, quote unquote, entitlement to appeal, is this in a civil case or a criminal case?
This is clearly a civil case, Your Honor. I don't think I've argued any other way. I think it's been characterized as civil throughout the tenure, at least that I've been practicing, I suspect even beforehand. The problem here is we, because it is this privilege we do have that entitlement to a due process hearing. You can't just permanently revoke that license without giving me the opportunity to be heard before a tribunal, in this case, the hearing officer, which then we're allowed to appeal for review to the district court and potentially to the appellate system if we think it's appropriate. So it's this due process hearing provides us that inroads for review by a court to make sure that it's legally being properly handled and the revocation is correct. And then I don't know if I answered your question, Justice.
Well, yes, I think you've said there's an entitlement to a hearing and you're not saying an entitlement to drive or have a license.
That is right. It's a privilege, Your Honor. And Justice Stacey, I forgot what your question was.
My question is, what is the status, sir, of your client's criminal charge?
It was resolved. It's been completed. All sentence has been completed. It's totally, well, in fact, in this case, it was resolved to less than a DUI or a refusal. And that's another issue with this situation is because it was resolved to less than a DUI or a refusal, he's not allowed to get an ignition interlock permit through the criminal case. So even though the ALR provides you that opportunity to get in the criminal case, because he didn't have the conviction that was necessary, he was not allowed to get an ignition interlock permit in the criminal case. So he's been barred from getting an ignition interlock, period, because of the way the case.
But he could drive.
Not until after a year of revocation. So he couldn't drive legally, and I'm hoping he didn't. It's always against my advice if it is, but that's a problem out in Western Nebraska, particularly. We don't have any access to some type of mass transit. I think we finally got one Uber driver in my area. I mean, we're not talking the ability to be able to get out and utilize driving privileges to do the fundamental things, whereas at least here, if I'm in Lincoln, I can take a bus, I can take a cab. I don't know if cabs are still here, but at least Uber, et cetera. In Western Nebraska and rural Nebraska, that's not an opportunity. And so the concern of the legislature was wanting to protect the motoring public, right? And that's a valid concern. And the way they did it is they said, look, we're going to revoke licenses. And then they said, we have this way to make sure that when people are going to be out, they won't have alcohol on their system. We're going to use ignition interlock permits. And when we use those ignition interlock permits, not only is it going to protect the entire public, it's also going to lead to decreases in reoffense. It's going to prevent recidivism if we look at some of the Nielsen discussion. And that's an important factor of what we have here. So now denying people access to that ignition interlock permit actually contradicts what the legislative intent was, which was to try and keep people who have been arrested for driving impaired to ensure that if they drive, they don't have alcohol in their system. Because that's what an ignition interlock device does.
Mr. Ireland?
Yes.
I'd like to go back real quick. Doesn't 60-498.02, if the DUI and refusal charges are dismissed or dropped, doesn't that drop the ALR?
Not for the refusal. That does for the DUI.
Refusal is automatic.
Refusal is automatic. You can't get it back. There's the only way you can defeat the refusal is to have the hearing and show that it was improperly granted. So you are right. If I blow and I get a dismissal of my case on the merits, and now I think there's some change because that's caused some issues in the past, I can get my license back. But if I refuse or if I'm characterized as refused, then that 1 year is hard no matter what. And the only thing I can do to mitigate that 1 year is an ignition interlock device or a permit. So does that answer your question, Justice? And so that's why when we're looking at this class of people, the legislature created the class of those who are arrested for DUI or refusal. And now they're trying to then create a subclass within that is only those people who exercise their right to a hearing are the ones that are going to be basically sanctioned. You have to trade your driving opportunity to drive versus your right to a hearing. And I think that's what creates the conflict and the problem in this statute. That defeats the purpose of the legislature, and I would ask that it is an improper and unconstitutional statute just for that section.
If we reach the equal protection question in this case, do you agree that the standard is rational basis?
I think there has to be a rational basis on it in general. I think because we're talking about access to the courts potentially, not just getting into the courts, if you looked at it that way, there is an opportunity. If you're just saying I'm being denied any opportunity to be in the courts, you could look at a higher scrutiny. But I think it's easy to do it on the rational basis. Any other questions before I'll reserve my remaining time for rebuttal.
Thank you very much. Ms. Johnson-Wiles, good morning to you.
May it please the court, counsel, Melissa Johnson-Wiles, Assistant Attorney General, appearing on behalf of the state of Nebraska. As the court is aware, a statute is presumed to be constitutional and all reasonable doubts will be resolved in favor of its constitutionality. And a plaintiff seeking to challenge the constitutionality of statute must show it by clearly establishing that the statute is unconstitutional before the court will find that. We have addressed at length in our brief why none of Mr. Travis's constitutional challenges are applicable. So I'd like to focus today on the rational basis for the legislation, in the case of the doctrine of unconstitutional conditions, whether there's a reasonable nexus between the condition imposed and the benefit given.
Before you address that, what's the state's position with respect to mootness?
As the court is aware, we have filed a suggestion of mootness because Mr. Travis got his license reinstated in December 2019 and no longer needs an ignition interlock permit.
Do you think what we should reach the issue under the public interest exception?
We think that with respect to the public interest exception, this statute has been in effect for a long period of time. It's been nearly 10 years. We don't think that this is a situation where it's capable of that. There are whether it's capable of repetition and kind of evading review. It's obviously the looking at the constitutionality of a statute is an important thing, but we're feeling that it's probably because of the length of period of time that it would not be so important that you would need to address that.
Why would it not be capable of repetition yet evading review? Mr. Island mentioned it's a 1 year period of time, so it's going to be hard for the issue to get to an appellate court, certainly by the time the license revocation period would be over.
Well, I think in the appropriate procedural mechanism, if there was a challenge to the constitutionality of statute and perhaps a request for preliminary injunction, something could have come before the court earlier. We are here based on the litigation decisions that were made by the appellant in this case.
So do I understand your argument correctly that losing your driver's license for a year isn't very long, so it's not important to the public?
I'm certainly not suggesting that losing your driver's license for a year is not important to the public. The question presented is whether the choice of having to seeking ignition interlock or administrative hearing would be the question presented. So a rational relationship exists between the challenge provisions of the ALR Act and a legitimate state interest. The 2011 amendments to the ALR Act had two goals, to swiftly protect the public from drunk drivers and to conserve limited state resources that were overwhelmed by the procedures involved prior to the amendments. At that time, a person facing administrative license revocation need only contest his or her revocation and further appeal to the district court to get an automatic stay of revocation. This procedure encouraged appeals, whether meritorious or not, in order to have the immediate ability to drive without the safety mechanism of ignition interlock. With the 2011 amendments, the automatic stay pending appeal was removed, with the state offering near immediate access to IIP in exchange for a waiver of the administrative hearing. This process is rationally related to the state's goals of both protecting the public from drunk drivers and conserving limited state resources. First, it protects the public because it incentivizes seeking administrative ignition interlock permit. And at the same time, it conserves state resources because given that option, a person facing ALR may choose to forgo the administrative hearing in favor of a faster access to ignition interlock permit.
So is it designed to incentivize applications for ignition interlock, or is it designed to incentivize waiving the hearing?
I think it's designed to do both. Obviously, if I had to choose between the two, I would say that it's designed to incentivize waiving the administrative hearing and conserving state limited state resources that had been overwhelmed.
How would you describe the IIP? Is it a right? Is it an opportunity?
So
an option? How's the state describe it?
So an ignition interlock permit is a privilege to drive. So it's a permit that's within a revocation that is the privilege to operate during the period of revocation.
So driving itself is a privilege, and the IIP is a secondary privilege to the initial privilege?
This court has, of course, in the context of due process, has found that driving is an important property interest. That should not be taken away without due process. The operating with the ignition interlock permit would definitely be a privilege within that important property interest.
If the legislature went in and revised the statute once again and just removed the ignition interlock permit from them, there would be nothing unconstitutional about that, would there?
The legislature is free to decide how drivers operating on the roads are allowed to operate on the roads, and I would venture that would not be unconstitutional if the legislature chose not to offer that option.
Because the previous version of the statute didn't contain an ignition interlock permit, correct?
The previous version of the statute did have the ability to have an ignition interlock permit after a period of no drive time. With the 2011 amendments, that no drive time was shortened, and with first time offenders, for example, there was the ability to have immediate access to IIP.
So the key is to have an opportunity to be heard before the revocation goes into place. Is that the constitutional issue?
In our view, the constitutional issue that's been presented is whether you can have you can exercise your right to an administrative hearing and have IIP at the same time.
Right.
And in his case, of course, he had already done that. So it's whether you can have an ignition interlock permit despite having already exercised your right to a due process hearing.
Well, forgive me here to clarify what rights are on deck. The same question that I asked opposing counsel then. What rights are on deck as you see it? The right to an interlock, the right to an appellate, a right to a hearing? Is it civil? Is it criminal? What's the breadth of our consideration that, therefore, we could proceed on a constitutional analysis?
We believe that, as outlined in the briefs in this matter, that either under equal protection or due process or under the doctrine of unconstitutional conditions, the appellant has not defined any right to have both ignition interlock and a due process hearing. So we would say that they do not apply. To the extent that you wanted to go down the route of analyzing under one of those three arguments, then of course rational basis would be the standard.
So as you understand it, the right that's being litigated is the right to simultaneously possess the entitlement to the interlock and simultaneously entitlement to the hearing.
Yes. And also, I would say that it might be defined as a right to not have to choose between the two.
Has this court ever addressed the doctrine of unconstitutional conditions? And what's the state's position about whether we ought to venture into that doctrine in this case or any other?
This court, as far as we could see, has never addressed the doctrine of unconstitutional conditions outside of the takings context. So Fifth Amendment, takings context in the Fifth Amendment. And we would argue that having in this framework that we should not entertain the analysis under a doctrine of unconstitutional conditions situation with respect to an argument that with procedural due process. So that's our position in this matter, that it doesn't apply and the court should not undertake to do so because, as we indicated in our brief in this matter, it would kind of open the door for a number of challenges with respect to situations where the government offers a benefit to a litigant in exchange for something, a benefit to the state.
Ms. Johnson-Wiles, I think you've answered this, but I want to understand the reason for the 2011 change of statute amendment was to take care of an overwhelmed administrative system. Is that correct?
Right.
Was it also to keep violators from having a license while those hearings were pending? Do I have a misunderstanding
of
that?
Right. So there were two goals. One was to protect the public, which has always been the goal with ALR. But what was happening prior to the amendments in 2011 is that because of the automatic stay, violators were driving without anything at all. So they were operating under a stay through the entire process outside of the administrative hearing.
So my next question then is, is there a way that the state could have amended the statutes or handled this problem differently than giving up the opportunity for a hearing? For example, could you have gotten rid of the automatic stay?
The legislature did get rid of the automatic stay while at the same time offering more of a benefit for ignition interlock at the same time. So they did do both of those things with the amendments in 2011. I think your question is whether they could have done it a little bit differently. Of course, strict scrutiny does not apply in this analysis, but I would point out a quote from Schindler versus Department of Motor Vehicles. That case is cited in our brief that the problems of government are practical ones and may justify if they do not require rough accommodation. So I'm not saying this is a rough accommodation. I actually think that there are a number of pieces involved that are certainly rationally related to the government interest, legitimate government interest. But that would be the case. So
thank you.
If there are no further questions, then I will conclude my argument. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have time for rebuttal?
1 minute and 26 seconds,
Your Honor. 1 minute and 26 seconds, Mr. Island.
So kind of addressing this 2011 amendment, That was the way they were able to address this concern of the system is getting rid of the automatic stay. And that doesn't occur anymore. And I think that's been the primary focus, continuing to protect the public. And I believe in response to Justice Frydenberg, before that 2011 amendment, they had a work permit that you could get, but there was no ignition interlock permit. That was only through the court system. Now, if I misunderstand it, I apologize. But I think that's a key issue is there is a way to address this problem. They've done it. They don't now, they want to separate, though they only want to punish those basically who exercise their right by not allowing them this opportunity for an ignition interlock permit. If it's there, your class is those who are arrested. They need to be treated the same. You can't try arbitrarily treat them differently.
The same by being, everyone's given the same binary choice?
No, I think what they're saying is those who exercise a right, due process, and we're talking about a right with that, are then prohibited from getting this ignition interlock permit. And that's what I think makes this a problem, because they're conditioning your ignition interlock permit on whether or not you exercise a right or waive that right.
You disapprove of the binary choice. You think everyone should have both choices.
They should be allowed to go forward. Yeah, they should. If they want to have a hearing because they think they're wrongly accused, they should be allowed to do so. But as we know, that's why we're attorneys. Nothing's black and white. And we have differences of opinions. And then if they lose that opportunity, they should be able to obtain that ignition interlock permit because it promotes the legislative intention to protect the motoring public and to decrease recidivism by having those who have it. And by not allowing it, it actually contradicts the legislative purpose.
How would that option, the one you just described, where you can have your cake and eat it too, how would that have addressed what the legislative history suggests was a crisis in the administrative hearing context? It was overwhelmed. How would that address the overwhelm?
Well, I think the automatic stay issue is probably what addressed it, Your Honor. Honestly, I believe that was probably the biggest condition and result of it was in the absence of the automatic stay, we're not going to have to go ahead and have these continued hearings and resources expended. And so there's going to be fewer hearings on that, and there are going to be people who want to examine it and challenge it because they think they're wrongly revoked. And that's what they're discouraging is those who believe that they're wrongly revoked from challenging that decision.
So the time frame we're talking about is still the pendency of the criminal case in these matters, because after the criminal case is completed, the court can grant an IAP, correct?
If they're convicted of a DUI or refusal. If they're acquitted, they can't do anything. If they plead to a different charge, which, in cases that have problems, they can't do anything. It's only if they're convicted of the two charges we're talking about. And that's what causes an issue as well, that clients who are able to resolve it or be acquitted of the charges then.
Of the refusal.
Yes. In this case, it would be a refusal. But it also applies to the DUI portion as well. Well, the DUI, they're acquitted. There are other issues that cause problems with that hopefully the legislature is addressing this term. So
let me understand. You're suggesting that what the legislature should have done is do away with the automatic stay, allow a hearing, and then if the person loses at the hearing, allow the ignition interlock.
Correct.
Wouldn't that also have the effect of delaying? If you talked about Western Nebraska,
right?
And as you opened, wouldn't that have the effect of a greater period of time when that person would not have the opportunity to drive? In most cases.
Well, not in most cases, because I think most cases people don't do the ALR hearing. I think they're an exception to the rule. They're not the majority of cases. And
does that suggest that the binary choice works if most people aren't requesting the ALR hearing?
I think.
Sorry to interrupt your answer.
No, that's all right. I think even in the past, it wasn't a majority. There were just more of them than there are now. I think if somebody doesn't want to have a hearing, then they're able to get the ignition. If they want to have a hearing, obviously they have to wait for that decision. That seems to make reasonable sense and then it contributes to the legislative intent of the statute. It also then gives opportunity for those people who believe they were wrongly revoked to challenge that through their right of a due process hearing. I don't know if that answers your question, Justice Castle, but all right. If there's no other questions, then thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you very much. That concludes arguments in Travis versus Lamb. Counsel, you are excused. Please continue to social distance and wear your masks if at all possible. And please leave by the side door of the courtroom, which is to the court's left. And you are right. And the next case of the day then is Villadal versus Villadal.